And I want to talk about one of the more fascinating of the mental mechanisms. This is called the, this is the subject of the game strategy. The game strategy. We usually use the abbreviations for a game strategy and call it a GS. GS. The GS is a fundamental mental mechanism. It's a fundamental mental mechanism. So therefore is one that you will come across as you work through the practical exercises. You'll come across it piecemeal, and if you hear this tape, it will put the whole picture together for you. You'll understand what you're dealing with. Eventually, of course, you put the whole thing together for yourself. You'd understand the mechanism. But anyone who's worked solo for a while, or even with other people, will recognise this mechanism. They may have come across it in therapy, piecemeal, bits here, bits there, but I think they'll find that when they hear this talk on the subject, it will put all the ends together for them, and they'll understand the mechanism in total, the mechanism of the game strategy, the GS. There are in life, and livingness only. There are, in fact, two ways to win a game. There's two ways to win a game. The first method is the direct power of postulate method. The use of the direct postulate. One simply goes out, meets the opponent head on, and crashes through his postulate with yours, and drives him into overwhelm. That is the direct postulate method of winning games. That's the direct postulate method. That's method number one. That's got nothing to do with game strategies. That is not a strategy. That is simply going out and winning games by direct power postulate. So that's got nothing to do with game strategies. But the second method is the method of winning games by the use of a game strategy. So we define a game strategy as a method of winning games below the use of a direct postulate. I'll give it to you again. A game strategy is a method of winning a game below the level of a direct postulate. Now, very clearly, this is a vast field. So what we need to do is to define our game strategy. Is to put the limits to the field, to the field that we're looking at. And until we've defined it, we'll be at sea. It's not a particularly easy one to define, a game strategy, because it's such a very, because of its broad application. But when you examine this, examine the following, I think you'll find that it does cover the subject of the game strategy. I've found no exception to this definition. As far as I'm concerned, it's a complete definition of a game strategy. Right, here we go. A game strategy. In order to be a game strategy, a thing must, one, it must be a fixed solution to a problem. Two, it must generate game sensation. Three, it must be kept secret from the opponent, or he or she will counter it with ease. Four, it must be known to work by having been successfully used by self on others and by others on self. That is the end of the definition. If a thing possesses all of those four qualities, it's definitely a game strategy. If it only possesses one or two or less than four of those things, it may or may not be a game strategy. It may be one and you simply haven't found all of it. But certainly if you find something in your mind that possesses all of those four qualities, it is a game strategy. And all game strategies possess all four of those qualities. So it is a definition. Now there's two more, number five, number six. These aren't a part of the definition, but they're part of the qualities of a GS, and if you know them, that they'll help you in your understanding. The GS is an overt act and is therefore culpable. That's number five. Number six, the exposure of a GS always produces shame. I think when you examine the foregoing, that you'll find that they are that they are necessary and sufficient conditions for the understanding of this mental mechanism called the game strategy, the GS. And now we better go ahead and start expanding this material to get an understanding of it. The easiest way to get the understanding is to go through the definition bit by bit. So we start off with number one. It must be a fixed solution to a problem. Well, yes, the GS must be a fixed solution to the problem. But what is the problem? Well, the problem is how to win the game below the level of the direct postulate. Well, there may be a number of reasons why a person can't use a direct postulate. But they may have insufficient power of postulate to win the game, or they may have sufficient power of postulate, but maybe that winning that game is against the law, so they can't win it by power of postulate. You see that? But nevertheless, they may have a desire to win that game, but they can't use direct power of postulate because the society in which they live inhibits the use of that power of postulate, so they mustn't use it. But nevertheless, they can. So they have to go into the game strategy. So it's always a fixed solution to a problem. It's a solution to a problem, and it's a fixed solution to the problem. Note that word, fixed solution. In the earlier part of the supplementary lectures, I talked very, very lengthily about the subject of the fixed solution, and I'm not going to talk about it on this tape. I'm not going to cover that material again. The subject of the fixed solution is very germane to the subject of the game strategy, but it is a separate piece of technology, and I refer you to the earlier tape. So the game strategy is a fixed solution to a problem. It's always a fixed solution. Like all fixed solutions, it may eventually become a problem in its own right, but that comes later in the cycle. It's always a fixed solution. Even when it's a problem, it's still a fixed solution. So it's always a fixed solution to a problem. So much for number one. It must generate game sensation. That is absolutely fundamental again. It's got to generate game sensation. If the application of the game strategy has got to win the game, you see, or at least it's got to produce some game sensation, show a semblance of winning the game, otherwise the thing is useless. So it becomes a part of the game strategy is that it must generate game sensation. If this behaviour pattern, this activity you have in mind doesn't generate game sensation, then I can assure you that it's not a game strategy. It must generate game sensation. There must be some sensation generated by this activity, this behaviour pattern. Right, so much for that. Now number three, it must be kept secret from the opponent, or he will or she will counter it with ease. That's number three. It must be kept secret from the opponent. Well, this is obvious on first principles. If the person could win the game by direct power of postulate, they wouldn't need the game strategy. Then the game strategy will only work when it's kept secret from the opponent. Now bear that in mind. It must be kept secret from the opponent, or he or she will counter it with ease. Now this poses an interesting thing. This air of secrecy about the game strategy infects the whole subject of the game strategy. The game strategy starts off by being a secret, and it's always a secret. It can be so secret, the game strategy, that it becomes even a secret from the person who's using it. He forgets why he's using it after a while. It's so secret. You know, it not only must be kept secret from the opponent, but it ends up being kept a secret from him too. He finds himself in a compulsive behaviour that he doesn't know he's lost contact with why he's doing it. So this is a definite part of the pattern is this secrecy. So in terms of our about a no goals package, the posture structure of the GS would be that it's a must be known to self, or at least early in the cycle it must be known to self, but it must be kept, must be not known to the opponent. So it must be known to self, but mustn't be known to the opponent. That's the postulate structure of it. And this throws a very strange complexion on the subject of the game strategy. Very strange complexion. It's almost paradoxical, the game strategies. That's why I don't think why any. It's not easy for a person, for researchers, to put this to cobble all the little bits together. I mean, Ron Hubbard in Scientology had various parts of the game strategy. He knew various bits of the game strategy, but he never put the whole thing together as and called it a game strategy. But he had bits. And it was the secrecy part of it that was beating him all the time. It eluded me for a long while, until I began to understand it. But the thing is, you see, the game strategy as a strategy is an existence. So as an existence, it's a being known. It's a being known. But a part of its strategy is that it mustn't be known to the opponent. So it's got this be not known component to it. So, as far as the person's concerned, he can know the strategy, but it mustn't be known to the opponent, otherwise it's useless. The opponent can counter it with ease. So, it's got this double-edged effect. You get that? It's a be known, it's an existence. But at the same time, it mustn't be known to the opponent, so there's a secrecy component in it. And this holds it in suspension in the mind. This is why it doesn't easily erase, why it's very difficult to handle in routine therapy. The thing as a construction, the game strategy as a construction, is an analytical construction. It is not a reactive construction. It's not a reactive thing. It's a thing of the analytical mind. It's a thing that a person cobbled together themselves. So you must understand that about it. It's not something which has its genesis in the reactive bank. It is something which has its genesis in the analytical mind of the individual who has a need to win games and creates the game strategy in order to win the game. So if you understood the whole of the games, of a particular game strategy, and got all the bits of it together and could see it in terms of a series of postulates, or in one-to-one posture, or as a pattern of behaviour, and could wrap it all up, a particular game strategy could wrap it all up. This game strategy could be made the subject matter of the to-no goals package at level 5C. It is an existence in its own right. The whole thing is an existence. And it is erasable at level 5C as an existence. So you must never forget that it is an existence and is therefore a junior universe and therefore is erasable at level 5C. But you've got to understand any particular game strategy, you've got to get all the bits out before you can do that. You've got to get it all out. That's why I'm giving you this data, to help you get it all out. So it must be kept secret from the opponent, or he or she will oppose it with ease. That's number three. Now number four, it must be known to work by having been successfully used by self on others and by others on self. Now this number four gives us the genesis of the game strategy. This tells us where the person got the game strategy from. They got the game strategy. 99.9% of game strategies you will come across in the psyche, their origins are in childhood. Their origins are in childhood. The game strategy might not have been fully fledged and fully developed in childhood. It might not have been until adolescence or later life, that the thing became a fully fledged game strategy in the person's psyche. But the origins of it are in childhood, and the the idea for the game, of a particular game strategy, the seeds of it, always come from this fact that the strategy has been used successfully on them. That often happens first. Often the first thing that happens is that somebody uses this strategy or something very, very similar to it on them, and it works. And the child realizes that they see this work. They think, gee, that really worked on me. And then they, later on, they start cobbling it and putting it together and start using it on somebody else, and they find that it works on someone else. And so then they start to use it. They then start to put it into action. And eventually it's now become the permanent solution, permanent fixed solution to this problem of how to win a particular game. But it's genesis, but the idea always comes about by, it's always present, by the way, there's no exception to this rule. The person didn't create the idea. They didn't sort of pick it out of a cloud or dream it up or anything. It was actually, those two factors are actually present, that the GS has been used on them successfully, and they have successfully used the GS on others. Those things are always present on every GS, and don't miss it. If you miss it, you'll never get the roots of the GS out. Those two factors are always present. This is where the person gets the conviction from that it works. He has double conviction that it works, because it worked on him, and he's made it work on others. So he has an unshakable belief in the efficacy of his GS. What better belief could he have in the efficacy of the GS? That it's been used successfully on him, and he's used it successfully on others. So he knows it works. So he puts it into action. As you examine the GS, you'll realise that it's there's something sneaky about every GS, about every game strategy, simply because that they're withheld from the opponent. There's a withhold factor in there, that the opponent is not part and parcel of what is going on. In fact, it's, in order for the thing to work, the opponent must be in the dark as to what is happening, and that is an essential part of any GS. Number three, must be kept secret. Now, quite apart from this, from the fact that it must be kept secret, because if the opponent discovers it, it's useless. Quite apart from that, the GS is an overt act in its own right. It's an overt act. It's not considered and appreciated. It's not a loving act. A GS. Anyone who's been on the receiving end of a GS would regard it, that they would say that somebody is committing an overt act against them. A sneaky overt act, because it's not an obvious one. It's not all out in the open. It's covert. There's a covertness about the GS, which makes it unpleasant. Makes it very unpleasant. So you'll find that every GS is an overt act, and is therefore culpable, is blameworthy. You're not supposed to have GSs in polite society. You're not supposed to have them. Now, this fact produces enormous conflict in the mind of the game player. On the one hand, he has the compulsion to play games and win games, and he cannot. There's certain games he considers that he cannot win by direct postulate, by direct power of postulate. So he has to use a game strategy in order to win them. He has the compulsion to win them, so he has a compulsion to use the game strategy mechanism. But on the other hand, every time he uses the mechanism, he builds up in his mind a burden of guilt. He knows he didn't ought to be doing it. He didn't ought to be using the mechanism, because the GS is an overt act and is therefore culpable. He can be blamed for doing it. But the GS must be kept secret. It's got to be kept secret, otherwise it doesn't work. Now, you're beginning to get a pressure cooker effect on the games player here. On the one hand, he must use the GS because he can't use anything else to win games with, he considers. So on that side, he's got to keep using the GS. But every time he puts it into action, he adds to his burden of guilt. And the GS eventually becomes like a powder keg in his mind. He keeps piling up the overt every time he uses it. But he daren't mention it to anyone, because they're culpable. It's an overt act. You see the cleft stick the compulsive player gets himself into by the use of the GS, of the game strategy mechanism. He ends up with a powder keg in his mind that is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And the fuse is getting shorter and shorter and shorter. So it should become no surprise to you to discover that the sudden exposure of a highly charged GS can produce the most violent reactions in therapy that are known, and in life can be known in life. Some of these sudden inexplicable homicides that you read about in the newspapers and hear about on TV are undoubtedly the result of suddenly, say in a marriage situation, that either the husband or the wife suddenly exposes the other person's, the spouse's GS. And the powder keg blows. The sudden flush of shame and guilt just tears the person's mind apart explosively, and they'll pick up a knife, a gun, or anything and kill the other person. The urge is to destroy the person that is trying to break their GS, because once it's exposed, it's useless. And so it's a destructive exposure. The psychotherapist is aware of the mechanism. Ron Hubbard caught the flavour of this. Do you remember his mechanism of the missed withhold in therapy? You miss a withhold. He caught this. He'd had Preclear's blow in session when a withhold was missed. You should say, well, the missed withhold, you know? And the mechanism there. What he got was, what he was seeing as missed withhold were really parts of game strategies. And the charge on them was powder keg. They were had a powder keg type of charge on them. And the Preclear wasn't certain whether the auditor knew about it or whether the auditor didn't know about it. And it was upsetting the Preclear in the session, making the Preclear up ARC breaky. And eventually the Preclear would blow the session. He didn't quite know whether the auditor knew or whether the auditor didn't know about his GS. But Ron didn't know all the factors of the GS, but he knew there was the explosive withhold there, and he introduced the mechanism of the missed withhold and the ARC break. He knew of the mechanism, even though he didn't quite understand how the powder keg produced that much charge. Well, we know why the powder keg comes about. We know the anatomy of the GS. We've got the numbers 1, 2, 3, and 4. We know how it comes about, and how this powder keg, the conflict between the need to use the GS and the need to keep it secret, and the fact that an auditor and a separate therapist can quite inadvertently blow the powder keg into view at any moment in therapy. And the Preclear will either blow therapy, kill the therapist, or take off for China, or do anything. In that instant of the exposure of the GS, the highly charged GS, you don't know what the person's going to do. They're an irrational being in that instant of when the powder keg blows. You don't know what's going to happen. So the explosive GS exposed. Never miss it. The explosive GS exposed. Every separate therapist should should thoroughly understand this mechanism. Anyone who wants to spend their life professionally as a psychotherapist should understand this mechanism and should understand the anatomy of what a game strategy is, and understand it's complete anatomy. So they know what happens when the pre-clear blows in the session. They've hit a GS. It never happens for any other reason. It's the only reason a pre-clear will blow in a session. It's the only reason he ever gets so terribly upset and ARC broken. There, when there's no palpable reason that the auditor's done anything wrong, the auditor hasn't flubbed. It's suddenly the session's going along fine. There's no flub by the auditor. He's running the right process. Everything's going fine. Suddenly the pre-clear ups and blows. What happened? Well, he touched the corner of a GS. The explosive GS exposed. It was too much for the pre-clear. He was, pre-clear puts the person with the GS is in an impossible position. It's culpable, but he's got to keep using it because it's the only way he knows to generate the game sensation, and he's got to keep generating the game sensation which the GS produces for him. So he's in a compulsion to use the GS. It works. He can't stop using it. It's a fixed solution to a problem. He can't stop using it. He's got to use it to generate the sensation and to win the games. But on the other hand, it must be kept secret. No one must know about it. So is it any wonder that the charge builds up on the GS, and that the exposure of the GS in a therapy session can produce an explosive effect on the pre-clear? It puts him in an impossible position. The thing mustn't be exposed, but it is being exposed. It can be shattering on the individual, the sudden exposure of a game strategy. So bear that in mind, the power of the mechanism. I'm not talking about a patty cakes here. I'm talking about sheer mental charge here, man. The charge on the real charge on the mind is in the field of GSs. You'll find more charge on the subject of game strategies than you'll find on any other aspect of the human psyche. The sheer charge, the powder keg there, man, it's quite incredible. Quite incredible. Of course, when a person's running solo, they don't have any trouble, do they? There they are, they're both the therapist and the patient. They're both. They're the auditor and the pre-clear. So the chart, there's no charge. So they can examine their GSs in peace and quiet without any charge at all. Without any explosive charge, that they'll feel the emotion of the shame, if there's any times when their GS was partially or they thought they might be exposed, they'll feel the shame, and they'll feel the guilt, the pile of guilt on their GS. They'll feel all that. They'll be aware of the powder keg, and they can take the thing apart. But it will not blow when they're running solo. It can't blow because there's no exposure. The person who's erasing the GS is the owner of the GS. You can take your own GSs apart in absolute safety. Nobody's going to get... There's going to be no homicides. You're not going to end up shooting yourself, I can assure you. There's no homicides. The powder keg never explodes. It just dissolves. And then finally it vanishes. Now, the subject of GSs is very broad. I'm not even going to attempt to give you an example of a GS. I'm not going to even attempt it, because the subject is just too broad. But I've given you the definitions. And the two, there's numbers 1, 2, 3 and 4. If it fits 1, 2, 3 and 4, then it's a GS. And there's the two subsidiaries, number 5 and number 6. If you know that about it, it's a GS. If you know all this, you know what a GS is. But I will tell you how you handle them in therapy. You can commonly what happens with a GS is that you become more and more aware of it as therapy progresses. That you'll become aware of this bit here, and there's a bit there, and you start to put the behaviour. You might not, the person may be do it quite unconsciously, like all fixed solutions. They become below the awareness, the conscious awareness of the person. But as the therapy proceeds, the person will become more and more aware of this behaviour. And then they start to think, well, there's a GS. And then they start to put the bits together, and they get one, two, and it fits one, it fits two, and it fits three, my God, it fits four, God, it's a GS. You see, now they can start looking at it and say, well, now this is interesting, I've got a GS. Didn't know he had one. Got a GS. What can he do about it? Well, he should proceed on with the ordinary therapy. Right until the point where he gets to level 5C. That is the place where you would address a GS. If you wanted to address it particularly, as a particular thing, you could address it at level 5C. They're not amenable to address as a specific entity prior to level 5C. And that is the place where you would address them if you wanted to address them. And the GS is addressed just like you would address any other junior universe at level 5C. There's no differences. There's no differences. And they come apart like a lamb at level 5C, they do. There's no trouble at all. What you would do at level 5C, you get to a point eventually where you know all about the GS. You know all the level, you know about one, two, three, four, five, six. You've got the lot. You know everything there is to know about this GS in your psyche. You've got the lot. Then what you do is then you classify it as a universe. You classify it as a universe, as an entity. You just classify it as a person, an identity that has this that has these characteristics, desires to put this GS into action. There. Get the idea? You're simply classifying the thing as an entity. You're imagining an entity in your mind that is putting this GS into action. Now, I realise that this is a bit of compartmentalisation there, but it's quite safe to do it this late in therapy. There's no harm will come of you. There's no danger of compartmentalising your mind this late in therapy when you're talking about level 5C. You're not going to go schizophrenic, I can assure you. There's no danger. No danger to it. I wouldn't recommend you play around with this at level 2 or level 3. But at level 5C, there's such a little charge left on the bank that on the mind that it's quite safe to do it. So you sort of get this. You imagine an entity who has a fixed urge to put this GS into action, and you specify each part of the GS in the entity in words. To give you an example, it might be it's a ridiculous example, a catfish trapper. Might be the sort of thing you'd end up with. This would be the identity that you're dealing with, a catfish trapper. It's someone who's got a GS which compulsively traps catfish, you see. Well, then you simply take the catfish trapper and make that identity the subject matter of the no goals package at level 5C. And proceed to erase. Now, if the identity doesn't erase, we know why it doesn't erase. There's only one reason why it won't erase this late in therapy, and that is that there's purposes associated with the identity which are to do with junior goals packages at level 5B. So you'd have to look at this. Maybe the word trap, you'd have to say, all right, well, a catfish trapper traps, for the goal to trap. Well, the goal to trap's unerasable, so you'd have to find an erasable goal wherein the goal to trap is located. Well, the goal to free contains the goal to trap in its negative legs, so you'd have to then sit down and erase the goal to free. See that? And then having erased that, you then go back and check the general to no goals package. Then you go back to level 5C and pick up your catfish trapper again and go ahead with the erasure at level 5C. You follow that? In other words, it's a standard erasure of the junior universe there. You're not doing anything special. All this I've explained before. It's all on the write-up of how to do it, of how you handle a junior universe at level 5C. You're treating it routinely as a junior universe at level 5C. But you need to specify it to get it into words. Don't just have it as an airy idea in your mind. Get it down. Get down to the nitty-gritty. What is this identity doing? Well, he's a catfish trapper. That sums him up. He's a catfish trapper. That's all he does. That's necessary and sufficient to describe him. Then you can use him. Then you can use it in therapy. Until you've got him specified, got him nailed down in words, you won't get any success at level 5C. While it's just an airy, fairy thing in your mind, you'll just flounder. But as soon as you can get the junior universe named, specified and named at level 5C, then you can proceed with the erasure. Now, so help me, there's no more to the erasure of the GS at level 5C than that. The vast majority of the charge on the GS comes off before you get to level 5C. You're only dealing with the last 2 or 3% of charge at this late in therapy. All the rest of the charges come off in the preceding therapy steps. So don't expect any fireworks at level 5C. The thing will erase like a lamp. Come across quite easily. But I'll tell you something interesting. The To No Goals package will not erase, the general to no goals package will not erase in therapy while you have some outstanding GSs still running in your life. You've got to get rid of these GSs before the general to no goals package will erase. So that is the general rule there. You remember the general rule when you get to level 5, top of level 5B, if that to no goals package won't erase, and then the only thing that could be preventing the erasure is a junior universe, which caused us to invent level 5C in the first place. So it's quite consistent with our rules there that it will prevent an ongoing GS in the psyche unerased. Can and will prevent the erasure of the general to no goals package at level 5A and prevent the completion of level 5. So there are a particular type of junior universe, a particular nasty and insidious type of junior universe, but that is all the GS is in the final instance. It's a junior universe. It's a junior universe. But it has those particular qualities. And I can assure you, you'll have a lot of fun with the GSs until you try and tame them, get one to come to grips with them and to understand them. They're more common than you think. You've got more than one. Everyone has more than one. But your first one will be the toughest when you've got that one erased. The second one's easier because you know what you know what to look for. You know the breed of cat. And after you've done two or three of them, the rest will go by inspection. You won't have to do anything. You just have to think about them and they'll blow. They'll fall apart. So that's the subject of the GS. It's a fascinating subject. Absolutely fascinating. It's one that Ron Hubbard never got all of it. He got nearly every part of the GS except the whole mechanism. He never put it all together and understood the mechanism exactly as we've got it here in TROM. But that's the mechanism. I wish you good luck with this resolution.